Good afternoon. Are you having a good conference? Yes. Ask me what kind of conference I'm having. I'm having a horrible conference. Someone stole my clothes. Well, no one was wearing them. No, that would never happen. In my dreams. I was on the train. And someone thought they'd make it easier for me to carry stuff, so they took away all my clothes. So this guy's gone off with a big bag full of my clothes. And I can imagine when they get back to the burglar's lair, and they're unpacking, and they get this pair of trousers out, and they go, "My God, we have stolen the clothes of a giant. We must hide." Serve the buggers right. So I'm entirely in new clothes, apart from the trousers, which I was allowed to keep. So there you are. But you don't want to hear about my problems, do you? Yeah, I thought it's got to be better than Bluetooth on Windows Phone. Or maybe not. We shall see. My mouse has been behaving a little bit temperament. Last time I kicked the lamp over and broke it. So I'll just put that back gently. There you go. It's kind of like a little Rob trap. there are many in this universe. Right, okay, so... fill in your review forms. You could win one of a cavalcade of tumultuous prizes, which includes a round thing with holes in the top, for which I have no idea what it does. But the thing is, you'll have one and they won't, which is the important thing. So fill your evals in, and you could win. Actually, the mains pluggy thing is very nice. The rest of it looks like it's computer stuff, so there you go. That's all fun and dandy. I'm going to put everything I talk about up on the world-famous website robmiles.com, which is legendary for being world-famous, at least in my world, okay? Your world might not be the same, might not be a congruent set, but there you go. So everything that I put out there, and the bottom line really for this... And the reason why I'm sort of talking about this stuff, because I like playing with hardware, is when I get bored, which is quite often, I guess, I go on eBay and buy stuff. Anyone else do this? A friend of mine gets drunk and buys guitars. I'm not quite that. These things that arrive. He's not married, obviously, but he has got a house full of guitars, which is nice. I am married. Obviously, I used to be a lot taller before I got married, I went online, here you go, that's an Arduino trinket costing £5, and a small array of lights costing around £5, and a Bluetooth receiver costing, yes, you've guessed it, around £5. And what I can do with this, I can show it a bit later if you wish, is I can control the colour and brightness of the lights from my Windows phone, okay? And I showed this to my wife, and she asks really, really piercing questions that go to the heart of the matter, which go on the lines of, "What's that for?" And I did what a bloke always does in a situation where he's confronted with this kind of issue. He builds exactly the same thing again, only bigger, okay? So this is a... I'm actually quite proud of this because I've been working on productizing the things that I've made, and I've printed the box and the diffuser, and inside here is exactly the same circuitry but with a big panel. And so with my Windows phone in one hand and my gadget, I can add a bit of green. Let's have some green. There's plenty of green, and I can add some blue, and I can add some red. And this thing's pretty damn good, actually. Again, I have no use for it. I can press this button here, and it'll just do like random displays of colours, which is great for 1970s spy movies. If you ever sort of, we could stick a bunch of these on the wall. Now, yeah, if only. So I'm going to spend an hour and a half of your valuable time telling you how to do something which is essentially useless. That's why I was placed on this planet, folks. Now, the thing about this is that I got this going, and I was kind of pleased. And you can use it for things like persistence of vision photography, which is nice, where you wave the thing around and get lovely light trails. And it's just a multicolored light. It's nice. One of the things I want to do I haven't done yet is take a picture and then render it in 8x8 and see if, using the circular confusion type stuff, you can look at it from a distance and see a recognizable shot in this. So I'm going to play with this, and it amuses me. As I was saying this morning, about 3 weeks' time, my daughter's getting married in May, 10th of May. I have to be there and pay for stuff. But I was talking to Jenny, and I was saying, what do you want for the table centerpieces for the reception at the meal? And she said, oh, nothing much, Dad. She said, just some lights in some electric lights in some bowls. And I thought, oh, my time to shine has come. So what we're going to have in every on eight tables, eight of these. Well, not quite this. I'll show you what I'm going to use a little bit later. But they'll all be 3D printed, they'll all be lovely, they'll all be networked together, and they'll all be controlled by my Windows phone. So Jennifer and her mum are doing things like planning the menu for the reception, inviting the guests, deciding which family should come, hiring the cars, all that kind of stuff. And I'm worrying about Bluetooth interfaces and serial data and color encoding and decoding and all the important wedding-y type stuff. And actually, as a division of labor, it's going really well because it's keeping me out of their way. That's actually working quite nicely. So this is effectively me playing around with stuff. And if I change the color back, it'll just drop down to a slightly more manageable shade. Oh, no, you just go back to there, please. Thank you, and stop your ticking. Lovely. No, stop. I said, yeah. Never work with children, animals, or computers. There you go. So I can leave that there, and that's quite pleasing. What I want to do, though, really, the serious part of all this is that this is very easy stuff to do, and I've worked quite hard to provide you with some stuff that makes it even easier. And what I'd like you to go away from this thing, if there is a tune I want you to be singing at the end, it's that actually taking a device like a phone and then giving it a physical connection to external hardware, other bits and pieces, is actually quite easy to do and really very cheap. So if you have got embedded data collection or you've got any kind of control stuff, or you want to have fun, which is the other thing which is kind of nice, then it's very, very easy to do this. And the fact that you can pick up these tiny little Bluetooth adapters for around a fiver and you can connect them to an embedded device, which doesn't have to be an Arduino, it can be other devices as well, and produce these composite data logging solutions is actually quite sweet. And so if you are looking at making connect, because once you hit the phone, then you can push the data anywhere, and you can do what you like with it, and you can do logging and all kinds of good stuff. And the better news is that under Windows Phone 8.1, it's even better because you can do things on background tasks. You can fire on Bluetooth events. When things come into range, you can fire events in your background tasks and respond to that and have a conversation with the device and pull data off it and trigger an event and then go on. So what I'm talking about here should be the start of something really quite interesting. And so the range of applications is quite wide, and I'm quite keen to get you all sort of thinking, ooh, this embedded stuff isn't actually a bad plan, and it isn't as hard as maybe I thought it was when we started. So that's where I'm going with this. I'm going to talk about Bluetooth devices. I did the NFC tag stuff this morning. That's not going to be, that's in this morning's video. I think you've missed that one, I'm afraid, so I'm not sure how I got there. But we're going to talk about basically how we get all this to work. And we start off by looking at Bluetooth on the Windows Phone device. All the Windows phones, including my lovely Lumia 1520, have got Bluetooth built in, and you can just effectively fire it up and make connections to devices really quite easily. It's a short-range networking standard designed for use in battery-powered devices. Technically, range up to 10 meters, 2.1 megabits per second. You would not use this to ship large amounts of data around. It's not really built for that. Pushing pictures backwards and forwards is fine. Doing multiplayer games is fine. Talking to the small embedded devices I'm going to be showing you, that's fine too. It all just works. Larger scale stuff, you've got TCP/IP for that. What you can do, and I was talking about this morning, is you can use Bluetooth to send small packets of data from program to program as a prelude to setting up a better conversation. And I mentioned this morning. If you want to talk over TCP/IP, that's fine, but you have to know the other guy's IP address. If you haven't got that, you're kind of stuffed. So what you can do with Bluetooth and NFC to an extent is you can use those to pass the IP addresses backwards and forwards and then get the proper sockets going to transfer data. So don't think of Bluetooth as the only way to do things. Think of it as part of your solution, and you'll be absolutely fine. If you want to send small amounts of data between sensors and control things, it's fine for that, and it works very well, and that's what I'm talking about. To use it, very easy. You go into your settings for your application capabilities, and you say, I'd like to use networking and also proximity. And once you turn those two things on, this means you can use NFC tags and Bluetooth to talk between your phone and any particular bits of hardware that you want to link to. And like I said, if you go online and dig a few of these out, these are my preferred weapon of choice because they're an absolute dead doddle to set up. They require zero work to get going. They're very, very easy to use. Bring in a few namespaces, proximity sockets and streams, and away you go. And at this point, another good piece of news, as far as you're concerned, pushing data into a Bluetooth device is just like pushing data down a stream. Okay, so you're not going to have anything particularly new or magical. The hard bit is getting the connection established. But once you've done that, everything seems to come out in the wash. If your program, at the moment, light control is sitting there, if I go off to start and do other things and mess around and then come back here, the good news is that actually it persists my connection. I can still control my ultra-bright. That's painful. I can still control my ultra-bright light even when the thing has been paused. So the good news as far as you're concerned is that Bluetooth connections do tend to hang around on the phone. You don't lose them as soon as you're pushed out. If the application ever gets terminated, you will lose that. But I can go off and surf the web and do other things and then finally drift back to my control application and then take over, and it'll just keep on going, which is nice. And power-wise, I left this going for a few hours because I wanted to check. I've got some battery-powered lights, which are the ones that are going to go on the wedding thing. I wanted to check how long they last. It just doesn't. It doesn't take any much power at all. It runs very well. So that's what we're doing. These are the namespaces. There's my mouse. That's fine. So, hello. If you want to write Bluetooth stuff, there's two ways you can do it this morning. I said, if you have an application, you can talk to people using the same app on their phone over Bluetooth with very low amounts of effort. You can find, they can have a name, you can have a name, you can see each other, set a link up and pass data back and forth. So if you've got a particular application where you want to share links or clipboard content, someone says, quite a nice idea, or anything where you want to pass information backwards and forwards between the same application on two different devices, Bluetooth will do that for you. And this morning I covered that and told some really good jokes too. Anyone was there? Weren't they really, really good? Yeah. My favourite, I'll tell you it anyway because it'll stand out again. There's a friend of mine who started going out with a girl who's got X-ray eyes, but I've no idea what she sees in him. That's one of my favourite jokes. All right, okay, fair enough. We'll keep moving. There's a company, actually, that's making these microcontrollers, and they're making them, they're making them smaller and smaller. In fact, this company is so successful, it had to move into smaller premises. okay, all right, fine. There you go, you see, you didn't miss anything, really. What I'm talking about today is really the business of talking to these kind of things, embedded devices. You can't debug using the emulator, of course, because it doesn't have Bluetooth. I have known people write some really clever stuff where they talk over a little TCP/IP link to a process running on the PC, which then passes the stuff out through the PC's Bluetooth adapter. If you're happy to build that kind of place to work, it can be done. Because everything is a stream, they just take the stream that would normally go to the Bluetooth and send it to a little application running on the PC which does the Bluetooth comms. If you want to do that, then fine, have a go, that's fine. But as far as I'm concerned, I plug my phone in and I debug the code on the phone and that just works a treat. And so that's how I've built the phone end of all this stuff. In terms of how we do it, well, here go. The Bluetooth standard is really hard to understand. For people who are simple-minded like me, it's really a pain. There's a whole bunch of these endpoint definitions, which you can query a device and say, okay, what endpoints have you got? And it'll give you a whole bunch of massive GUID numbers, which we then try and figure out and get very confused by. The nice thing about 8.1 is those are all hidden behind enumerations and things, so you don't have to worry about magic numbers quite so much. But there's a whole bunch of different numbers for things like headsets, music players, phone devices, blah, blah, blah. And the one I want to use, the one that this little device here understands, is the serial data protocol. That's what I'm going to use. I'm going to basically push an 8-bit byte in one end, and it'll pop out the other end into my program. And that's all I need. Everything else, I can build on top of that. And so, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, I go down to my Bluetooth, my website of choice, which is usually eBay, and I buy these things, the JYMCU HC06 wireless Bluetooth device, of which I have now about 10. I see these as an investment in the future. if you go to China and buy them from there, they take about a month to arrive, but they're about £4 a pop. And for that, you basically get a thing which you put 5 volts into and 3 wires, and you then get your serial bidirectional communication, and you turn the thing on, and it basically wakes up and says, anyone want to pair with me? And when you pair with it, which is what you normally do with it, I think then once you pair with it, then that thing can then be connected to. And the nice thing about these that I find really useful, you don't have to configure them at all. You can, but you don't need to. So I got this one out of the shrink wrap, plugged it in, and just used it, paired it with the phone, and off we went. And so if you want to play with these things, that's a really good starting point. It'll have to talk to another device, which more in a minute or two, but I quite like these guys. I'm not on commission, would that I was. But it's easy. You just turn the thing on, pair with your phone, and then you actually find a connection pair, which is something which you will search for the appropriate endpoint, which exposes the connection point for your stream creation. You build the stream, and then you mustn't cross the streams, of course. So that's a Ghostbusters reference there, which no one seems to have spot. I won't do that again. It went a lot better in rehearsal. you make your stream, and you basically then either listen on the stream for incoming or push data down it to send stuff out, and that's it. And then this thing will then toggle a certain baud rate, which is a serial data speed, to the embedded device, and then off you go. This is what I ended up with. Because I have a lot of these, I've paired lots of them with my phone, and they've all got the same name. And you might think, my goodness, that's stupid. But turns out not to be, because what I do is, as long as I'm not so daft as to have two of them at the same time, it'll just find the one that's presently nearest and active. So I've given them all the default name, which is HC06. That's how they come from the factory. But if you read up on the datasheet for this thing, you can talk to it via the serial port and tell it what its name is. So you can give it different names should you wish to do that. And it will retain that name once it's been powered off. So you could call one downstairs kitchen door and one upstairs sensor and blah. And you could browse for those and connect to them with your phone if you wanted to do that. But the way I work, I prefer it. I just effectively turn the phone on, and the phone then goes off and finds the nearest HC06 that's actually connected and fired up and talks to that. And that seems to work very well. So don't worry about the fact they've got lots of names. You can actually sort of... the system, that's just a friendly name. There's a great big magic number behind there, which is the one that Bluetooth really uses, and we don't have to worry about the fact there's several with the same name, because Mr. Peerfinder will sort that out for us. Now, if you were here this morning hearing all those great jokes, then you heard about Peerfinder in the context of point-to-point communication between two phones. It's the same chap doing our Bluetooth for us, and effectively we say to Mr. Peerfinder, will you go off and find me, and here's a nice number. It took me ages to find the right one. I started off at 0000001, that didn't work. Then I went 00002, and then I grew an enormous beard, which I might do again because my razor has been stolen. have I mentioned that? You go online and you find these endpoint IDs, and that one is basically a serial transceiver. And that's what this thing will broadcast. If you turn it on and say... just leave it chugging, it'll sit there, and anybody that tries to make contact will get a message back saying, hey, I'm a serial transceiver of this type, and you can talk to me on this endpoint, And so if I have three of them, I will get three responses back, and I can pick between them. But if you know your UIIDs of the device you're using, just pop this in to the list, and away you go. It's basically a GUI that was set up by the Bluetooth standards people, and this is the number that I went onto the internet and discovered for the device I was using, and it's all in there. So just use my number, and it'll work with these things. This works with most serial devices that I've played with. I've used some different ones as well. Some of the Gadgeteer ones also work on this number. So once you've got that in there, you're away. So you basically say to this thing, okie dokie, go off and tell me all the people. If you, people that can talk this, if you want to just find all the people that I'm paired with that actually might be available to talk to, then you can use the additional alternative identity, which is basically Bluetooth colon paired. And that will go off and look for everybody who's presently connected to your phone and bring that back as a list. This is simpler in some respects, but trickier in others. If you have a headset and a serial adapter and a couple of other things and a car, then you'll get all those in here on different endpoints, which can be confusing, and you have to find the correct one by name. Whereas my approach here of using this magic number will only identify the folk I can really talk to. So I quite like this one. But you'll see both approaches out there, and both of them will work. And so, if I have lots of HTO6s, then I'm going to have a problem, but I then tend not to do that because I'm not that daft. So I call this method find all peers async, and it will go off and it'll find a list of everybody it thinks I can talk to. It takes a while, can take several seconds to do this, so you fire it off asynchronously. I've got a little connecting wait display, which is all in the program, which I'll be putting on robmiles.com if you get hold of, which just makes it look busy while it's working. And when that's finished, I'll actually get myself a list of all the peers it's found. If that list is empty, it usually means that my Bluetooth device isn't turned on, and so I have to go and connect it or whatnot. If I get back a number of these things, I search through, and effectively what I'm doing here is I'm looking for a peer with a particular name. So I'm going to go and say, get the name out of the peer I'm looking at and see if it's the chap that I'm really after. I convert both ends to uppercase because I'm like that. This seems to help a little bit in terms of me typing things in wrong. If I find the one I want, that's the guy I want. So I assign my peer to be that chap, and then away we go from there. Stuff can go wrong. You can kick lights like this and then have to burn your hand putting them back. That's actually a very dangerous play. Health and safety are very worrying. Anyway, things can go wrong. Here's some magic numbers to copy into your code. If you get that top one, that means you haven't got Bluetooth turned on. And if you've got to that second one, that means there is no Bluetooth on this phone. And so you can respond appropriately. If I don't get either of those, I throw in the towel and just pull the message out of the exception and give the user that instead. So I'm as helpful as I can be. That's all in the code, and it should just all work. Once I've done that, we have some fairly unpleasant code. Is code pleasant or unpleasant? I don't know. Make myself a stream socket, and then, having done that, I do an asynchronous connection. I tell the user, state string notify is a little piece of code I've got. It's a property which effectively fires an event in someone watching me. So my little Bluetooth thing can tell the user of the device that the status has changed and maybe you want to display this now. Having done that, we then connect the socket, which is effectively we make a data writer from the stream that we've got, and we then, little Endian, that sounds great, it's lovely, little Endian, he's a nice chap, lives in a I have reservations about okay, right, fine. Work that audience, Rob. It's to do with the byte ordering of the data that gets sent. The main reason it's there is because that makes it work properly. So I'd advise you to leave it in. If you do, it depends on what you're talking to. The Arduinos that I'm talking to have their data ordered this way. I'm only ever going to send bytes, so it doesn't really matter too much to me. They're all going to be the same way around. So that's all jolly good. And once you've done that, then we can tell the user that we're all good to go and start sending messages. Sending messages is easy. I have an array called message bytes, which just contains a byte array, things I want to send out there. and I just call the write bytes method, and then just because I want to make sure it goes now and not when the stream thinks it might be a good time to send it in the future, I store it and flush it. And that means that if I'm just sending two or three bytes, most of my commands are very short, then I'll just send those like that. They'll go straight across the interface, and the device on the file will receive them. I mean, most if I'm sending the color information sent as just the three bytes of the color RGB and the command that says fill your display with that color. If I'm doing the one where it's changing, I'm sending 64 color values, and so I do something a bit sneaky in that I actually compress the color data into a single byte and send it as an RGB. Across the bits, because I don't really worry too much about color fidelity, and I get three times the speed that way. But you can steal all that code. It's all jolly, jolly fine. To read stuff, yeah, okay. So the user, you can do both ways with this. The user can be pressing buttons and doing things on the Arduino end, and we can then send that message back into the phone, so we can get the phone to pick up when things have been done. We just call a read asynchronous, which effectively blocks the program until it gets something down the Bluetooth port. We don't know how much we're going to get. Might be one byte, might be 100, depends on what the user's doing. So they push a whole bunch of stuff across, and then my code effectively, it's not particularly elegant, but again, I like it because whatever else it does, it also works. I want my mouse back, there you go. So I just figure out how long it is, make a byte array that length, and then just copy the stuff I've just got into my byte array and then push it back. That's probably not as elegant as it might be, in that I'm copying things just to get the length right. If I pass the length back as well, I could make it a tiny bit more efficient, but I don't really care, to be honest. It works for me. But can you see that's effectively going to deliver a bunch of bytes to my listener, who can then do what they like with them. And that's it. So Rob's Windows Phone Bluetooth library is now available and up for grabs. And this effectively does all the heavy lifting for you. So the good news is that you don't have to do any real work to get this to go, because you can just pull my library down and play with it. Effectively, the way it works, you make yourself a manager, Mr. My Bluetooth, and then there's a whole bunch of delegates you can bind to, which are, I've got a connection, I've lost a connection, I've got a message, I've sent a message, and the diagnostic state has changed. And so you just bind to those. Each of them is effectively a method that will get called. If it's one of the give me some data methods, it'll get sent a byte array. And what my program does, I'll show you in a minute or two. And then off we jolly well go. Sending data, yeah, just one of the things I want to do is send it a color I want to fill it with. And then I just call the send bytes method and just pushes it down to the happy receiving device. And it all just works. If I get stuff, my program just says I've received it and puts it on the screen. But you can do what you like. So all you have to do to get Bluetooth talking to physical hardware is take my manager class, drop it into your program, wire up some events to whatever you want to have on your screen or whatever, and then just give it a kick and off it will run. And I hope you find it useful. It was kind of fun to write. It's been extensively tested in the wedding preparations. So I'm fairly happy it'll work. We'll explore in a bit more detail how it manages the messages, because that's the other thing you have to think about a bit when you're sending this stuff. The problem with things like Bluetooth, if you're doing stuff with devices, things can happen at any time. I can get a message at any time that means something's up, Rob, and I might not get all the message at once if I just strike unlucky, because the program in the Arduino or whatever is packing things up and sending them across. I don't know how the serial hardware and whatever inside here is buffering things. So I might get part of a message followed by silence followed by the rest. So we have to have a way of actually managing that. So what I've done is written a really, really stupidly simple thing. But before I mention it, I'll tell you that the real trick for passing data between embedded devices and your program is to see if you can fit it all in one byte. Because if you've got one byte, you've got no packing around, it just arrives, you've got your 8 bits, that's it. So if you're sending, if you've got 8 switches, that's a bit each. If you're sending analog values, think very carefully how much precision you need. Because things like Arduinos will give you 10 data bits. But whenever I use them, the bottom two data bits are pretty much always noise, which you can average out if you like, but why not just shift it a little way and throw that data away and just send 8 bits across? So think about what you're using the data for, and if you've only got 16 possible speed levels, because that's the way your motor is, just send 4 bits. And don't kick the light. I wonder if I'm going to have to find out if I'm the only person who's kicking the light all day. We'll have to see. So, probably is just me. if you can get it into a byte, do that. That works really well because it just, boop, just goes. Only assemble messages when you really, really have to. And as part of my continuous commitment to quality and the great user experience, for which I'm renowned, I've also written a message packer, which has a really horrendous little format, which I invented, on the back of an envelope. Don't code whilst drunk, people. It doesn't end well. And this is effectively, I send everything in binary, so all the numbers mean what they say, apart from, FF means here's another packet, and FE followed by 0 means here's an FE, and FE followed by a 2 means here's an FF. So it's a very, very simple protocol, I thought. And so I send a bunch of data across using this, send the start of the packet, tell the system what command it is, tell the system how many bytes there are in the packet, then a bunch of data, and then the check code. There's the data, sorry, and then a check code at the end. There is nothing to this. The reason why it's a bit of a mess, and I'm not particularly proud of it, is that I'm receiving this on an Arduino, which has, on a good day, with the following wind, a few hundred bytes of memory left for you to play with. By the time I've loaded my libraries in, and that's a few hundred bytes, people, not a K or a mega or that giggly thing. This is basically a tiny amount. And if you get your program wrong in terms of memory allocation, then you don't get an error, you don't get a warning, you don't get an exception, you don't get nothing. The thing just sits and grins at you. This thing here is controlling 64 LEDs, each of which has an ROG and a B value. That's 3 times 64, that's about 100 and something bytes. I had it working with 63 lights for an entire evening. I built it, fired it up, nothing. Right, what do we do? Okay, we try it with 10, it still worked. Try it with 30, it still worked. Try it with 40, it still worked. Got to 63, it still worked. Went to 64, poof. So I had to figure out how I can actually shave a few bytes of memory off the use I was doing to try and just trim it a bit. And then finally it fitted and it ran. So in the context of what I'm doing, I was right at the edge of the memory envelope. And I actually rather like that. My background is punch cards and Algol 60 and writing embedded stuff really appeals to me because you haven't got anything underneath you. It's really, really tight stuff. You can do the most horrible, horrible things you like because no one's really going to care too much as long as it works. And so this particular command format lets me decide what the command is and then get all the way to the end acting on it and then either junk it or not on the checksum without having to buffer anything. And so effectively, if I get a command in here, I'll go all the way up to the point of driving the LEDs and then either chicken out or not, depending on the checksum value. So I've written it this way just because I can make it work in C inside the Arduino in a very small amount of space, but I'm not particularly proud of it. Don't think about things like JSON or nice, proper, friendly XML type things. It will just not handle that. It's not what it's for. Although there are embedded devices that can handle that really well. So, yeah, I'm not particularly proud of it, but it works. And what I have found is that at weddings, people never look at your lights and go, you know, you really should have used a better packet format there, Rob. The thing I'm going for is, ooh, look at those pretty colours. If I can get that, then that's about it. And the data transfer underneath that, who cares? So, yeah, I quite like it because it's very lightweight. I've got a little Arduino library which does it all. So, again, you're welcome to make use of all of that. In terms of, I've been mentioning this Arduino thingy, and I'm wondering if people are going, well, what's an Arduino? What's the on about? Okay, well, This is an Arduino. If you buy a proper one, it'll cost you about £25 in the UK. If you go on eBay and buy a Chinese clone, this is about 10. And what you get for your £10, about 11, 12 euros, something like that, you probably get them. If you go to China and you're prepared to wait several weeks, they come down to 6 or 7, and they get even cheaper. You plug your USB port in there, and it appears as a serial device. You then write software on the PC, press the go button, and it's burned into the chip, which controls everything. And then what you have across the top is about 8 analog inputs and about 11 or so digital inputs, which you can use to do what you like with. And there are also outputs as well. There's also a 5-volt and a 3.3-volt supply. And if you want to, you can power it through these sockets on there. In fact, you can get versions which have no sockets that you solder wires into for making more productized things. You can also get tiny versions of this. There are many, many different versions. You can get the other one, which I like, is this guy's called a Trinket. And this is the same kind of thing. This is about a fiver. And this, you plug the USB in there, and you program this up the same way. It doesn't have as many pins, but it has enough to be interesting. And that's kind of what I like. So you buy one of these things, and if you've got kids and you want to play with hardware, a lot of people go on about Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi is nice. It's a fun device, but I think Arduinos are better because they're much cheaper when you blow them up, and not that I would ever do that. And the other thing is it's more immediate. The Raspberry Pi, you turn it on, and the first thing it does is boot Unix, which is fine, but if it's controlling a robot at the time, the robot, bang, haven't even booted yet. This thing, you turn it on, and it runs your program. That's it. That's all it does. And it just starts at the reset vector and then runs all the C that you put in there. So it gets control. It's dirt cheap. It has hardly any memory. But if you're with your kids trying to get lights come on to when you press buttons and robots that react to stuff and all these kind of good things, plants that tell you when they need to be watered, all that kind of thing, lights that go on and flash in different ways, this is great for that. We're doing some stuff where I work in the university at Hull. We've got some, like a monthly club where we get together and write Arduino stuff. And what we did last week was we had one of these and a flex sensor and a couple of buttons and a multicolored LED, which you can drive from here quite handily. And you press the button and you had 5 seconds to score 3 hits with the Nerf gun from across the room, which the kids loved. And off we went with them. It's basically a bit of C that effectively does the timing, counts the times the flex sensor has bent, updates the counter, sounds the buzzer, and you can productize that quite comfortably. And the kids can see that the stuff that's around them that's embedded and doing stuff isn't actually magic. It's just a whole bunch of this code called program. And they sit down and they start playing around with it. And because it's a bit like writing a game, there's a setup method and a behavior loop, and that's all they see. And because the API is things like, get me the number from this sensor and copy it to that pulse width modulation output so I can track levels and stuff like that. Because the API is fairly well defined, it's very easy to use. It's not actually made by Microsoft, so maybe I should stop talking about it at this point. But now, if you want to get into playing around, you've got kids, start messing with it because it's pocket money prices. If you want to get a depth sensor to measure distance, then £2 off eBay. And now you've got a little thing which is a range finder that'll give you a number. And if you want to do, flashing LEDs, flex sensors, things for detecting liquids, all kinds of stuff like that, do that. If you want to do it the other way, these are kind of fun. This will cost you about £4 on eBay. It's a servo motor and a driver board. So you plug this in to your little Arduino board, and you write the appropriate app for your phone, and now you're adjusting the vents in your greenhouse or locking the cat flap or whatever you like. With this. And it's a stepper. It's reasonably precise. The gearing's quite good on it. I think they're actually made in China by the million to actually control vents on air conditioning units. That's what they're really for. But they're quite powerful. You can get 4 of them, make a 4-wheel drive robot. You can put Lego wheels on them and all kinds of stuff. But you get 4 of these for less than £20. So now you've got something which you can really control and do things with. So we can have, for our shooting game, we can have moving targets now. And all kinds of fun things like that. So it's all really quite sweet. And it starts with this little beast. Yep, you get 30k of program space and 4k of data space on the starting ones. So you're not going to have big programs in this thing because they ain't going to fit. And the programs run on the device. You write the code using the thing called the Arduino IDE. This is the worst part. This is fairly horrible. I don't like this as a place to work. It's can you think of anything more inspiring than an IDE written in Java? Because I can't. And it has all the magical properties you would expect with that. But it works, and the kids won't know any different. You lose your IntelliSense, and you lose all your single-stepping through the code and all that stuff that makes Visual Studio. I went back and wrote some phone code, and it was like, oh, thank you, Lord. It's brilliant. This is, but it's but the good news is, from the kids' point of view, a lot fewer distractions because there's less buttons to press. And the ones you need are all there. If you want to debug, yeah, you can do that. On your Arduino connection, it goes in the USB port and turns up as a serial device. You can actually send messages back to the host computer as printed messages. And so you can then use the monitor to see what your program's doing. And so this is, again, not a bad message for the kids to get their heads around, that if you're going to actually write some code, thinking about how you might instrument it isn't a bad plan. This is a little program which just reads an analog input and then sends the value back up to the serial monitor so you can see what's going on. So all that's possible. That can all be done. We've actually done... Well, I can do the demo again. Let's actually do the demo through my phone on the connected thing. So I'll have to wire everything up, and I'll show you it actually running. You've seen it. You've seen it go. It's still... Actually, no, before I do that, still working. The phone is now locked. If I unlock it and then fire it up again, I've still got control. So it rides out to timing out, all kinds of good stuff. So let's have a go. What could possibly go wrong? Well, for a start, I can't untangle my wire. How does wire do this? What is it that makes that happen? There you go, perfect. So plug that in there. When I drop out of the program, I'll lose my Bluetooth connection, but this thing here still remembers the previous setting. It actually gets quite warm, so I'll turn that off. If I turn it back on again, the reset behavior inside here is to turn the things a nice, gentle shade of red. So when it stops being red, we'll know we've actually made contact. So I'll plug this in into here. Ah, there you go. So all good. So now I go back to my copy of Visual Studio, which I happen to have lying around. Oops, maybe I don't. I was sure I did. Oh, well, never mind. So up comes Visual Studio. I'm running 2013, the preview version of the latest version of the environment, and my phone has been upgraded to 8.1 as well. So I've got Cortana, which is quite cute. And all that kind of nice stuff. And it wants to show me all the pictures it's taken, which is nice. Don't feel obliged to do that. You can go away, that's lovely. Now give me my Visual Studio back, and I'll go and find light control. Let's make sure I get the right one. I'd hate to show you the wrong program. So we go in here, and you get to see all my innermost secrets. What I do now, you may find this surprising. Lots of students do, but this is what I lecture for a living. It's what I do. Occasionally I'm doing this, and I'll veer into the folder marked exams, and they all go, woo, and then I don't, and then I refuse to show them anything else. It's quite amusing. It's quite part of the process of beating them down. I tell them that I'm actually employed by the university to crush dreams and break spirits, and so that's what I'm there for. And they tell me I have a knack for it, which is quite pleasing as well. So there you go. So this is running as a Silverlight app under the new environment in the brand new phone. The process by which you set these things up and manage the input-output is subtly different on the later versions of the OS, but everything will work. It's all backwards compatible, and I should hopefully be proving that. So here's all my magical stuff. If we look in Bluetooth Manager, then this is the guy that does all the setting up, and you can see here that I've actually got my he's basically a little state machine, and if he's idle, then it's good to go. Otherwise, he's busy doing something, because if you try and set two things up at once, really bad things will happen. And so I basically check to see if we're in the emulator. If we're not, then I fire off my connection setup doohickey, which is down here, and he does all those things that you saw on the slides. So he'll actually get the connections, he'll find all the peers. I've got both versions in here, but that's that magical number. So what I will do, just for giggles, is I'll put a breakpoint here so that once we've actually found our connection, we'll get a list of all the people that we've noticed. And what I will do is I'll deploy this to the phone just as it times out. Oh, no, that's good. That's amazing. So off we go. So my program is now running. And if I hit the connect button, it'll start the connection process. Now, there you go. It's going to try and find all the peers. So I'm going to put a breakpoint on the next line and then let it run on. And so what's happening now is it's down in the bowels of Bluetooth. This does take a few seconds to complete, but he's looking around the neighborhood. But you're all in your pockets turning on your serial devices. Actually, most of the time I have self-sabotaging demos. I don't need help from passers-by. I can blow things up all by myself. So yes, don't mention 2 years ago in the Kinect demos, because I still have nightmares about those. That was awful. Anyone here for that? Yeah, great. Yeah, that's best night of your lives, worst night of mine. So here we go. We've got some peers. We have two. We have a count of one, so we've actually found someone, which is good. So now if I step over here, we actually work through, and we're looking for a peer with the name HTC06. Let's see if we can find him. Because his name here is... where are we? Yeah. Device name. Yeah, here he is. So this should drop straight through. Yeah, there we go. I found you. We can now go home. I'll tell you that that's who you are. Drop out of there. We're good. We're going to make a socket. Ooh, yeah, okay. I hate that message, but I leave it on. Not quite sure why. I must be latent programmer masochism, I guess. So here we go. Now we're going to make a stream from the socket that we've got. Wait for this one. Might take a few seconds to complete. And then once we've done that, then it'll tell me we're in business and my lights here will go off, because the first thing is turn the lights off on the device so they all go black. Yeah, bind it. That's lovely. Step over you. Diddly-dee. Oh, yeah, okay, right. Fine. Don't tell me anymore. I'm bored with that. Stop being funny. So there you go. And then tell the outside world we've got a connection. And then at this point, we're actually in business and I can start doing my thing. So display goes off. And so now, if we look at how my program actually works, again, it's not terribly elegant, but users don't seem to mind that much. What I have going on in here is what I discovered, and again, this is just how I did it. I've got three sliders on the screen. Oh, don't press the camera button. That's just silly. No, I've just stopped the program. Oh, no. Robert. You buffoon. Okay. Yeah, okay. I've got three sliders on the screen at some point. I was binding onto the... Oh, okay, yeah, here we go again. Mother told me there would be days like these. She didn't say what to do about them, though. It's not terribly helpful, Mum. Okay. If I bind to the events these things produce as we slide them up and down, then my poor little Bluetooth transmitter gets overwhelmed by events if they move them about, because I just get loads of them. So what I do is a little bit more subtle than that. I have a ticker which ticks 10 times a second, and it goes, have the sliders moved since last time? And if they have, I'll send a changed event out there. So I'm kind of decoupling. If you have got manual control going on and you want to actually respond to it, my suggestion is not to bind to the changed events on the controls, but to have a thread which is ticking, which basically reads them all back and compares them, because that way you've got complete control of the rate at which you use the interface. And so I've actually found that works quite well. And so now, yes, if I do this, then I've got my green light coming on. But what's really happening, if you look at the code, I'm not touching you now, I'm scared of you, is when I go tick, if I don't have a Bluetooth connection, then I give up. If I'm busy doing something else, I give up. I set the flag. There's a possible threading issue there, but I choose to ignore it. If I have a message to send, I'll send it. I check my color values. And then my message controller has a thing that says, build me a command to set the entire screen with a particular color, which comes back as an array of bytes. I send that out. I then record the old red and green values, and I go home for tea. And that happens, say, about 10 times a second. So there's no question of me, if I move these things up and down, overwhelming my Bluetooth device with commands, because it'll only send them out at the rate it detects the changes. And I find that works okay. So by all means, steal this code. Use it for your own weddings. I don't really mind. But if you do, send me pictures. That would be nice. So that's effectively how it hangs together. And it works. And I don't on this device, because I have no need. But what I can do is I can push messages back the other way, and they just get displayed on the screen at the moment. But so if you wanted to actually tell this thing to do something, a command that says read your ports and push it back, that's all in the Arduino code. In fact, I haven't shown you that. I will show you that, because that's even grippinger. I'm sorry if it's a bit hard to read. That's because it's Java. No, I'll show you a trick that drove me nuts. We go into here. Let's make the text even bigger, because I like that. Let's go for 30, and we can see it a bit better. And we hit OK. So now it's larger, but the way that the cursor doesn't actually move properly over the letters sometimes, it gets very strange. So this is my Arduino code. This is running inside the panel itself, and what we've got here is two things. We have a setup, which is the method which is called by the Arduino environment to say, set yourself up, please. Then we have a loop, which is repeatedly called by the Arduino environment to update your embedded device. This reminds me a lot of XNA, which is as good a way of any as segueing into a plug for tomorrow's session on Mono Game. But as far as you're concerned, you could just write a straight C-sharp program and put that in. Sorry, not C++. Wait, not C-sharp. But they've chosen to package it like this to allow kids to get the idea of the fact that embedded things repeat an action continuously while they're awake. So my setup does, the first thing it does is it tells the Bluetooth serial port to talk 9600 baud, because that's what these little devices like to do. A baud rate is the speed at which you send data down bits of wire. And I can recall when I was younger soldering these wires together and burning my fingers and having a horrible time. The thing about them is that you think baud rates have gone, and then you buy a GPS device that has a serial port on it, and away you go again. So that's the speed you have to use for this device. It works a treat. If you want to, you can reprogram this to talk at higher data rates. That's about 900 characters per second, which is, for my purposes, absolutely fine. But you can make it go faster than that. I tell my colored strip to begin. I then effectively light it up. And then, having done that, I put red into it. Color fill, 20 red, no green, no blue. The maximum intensity is 255. And so that gives me a nice sort of dim red thing, so I know that there's actually power there. Then when my program's running inside my Arduino, if I've got some characters available, then I read one. If it's not an FF, I give up on it because I'm waiting for the start of a packet. This is my Robert Stupid protocol. If it is an FF, I do this and this. Oh, I'm so proud of this. This is the kind of gnarly code that people like me get proud of. C is a language for hackers, okay, in the full sense of the word. And C lets you do things like magical go-tos, to what this is. This is something which, in C, if a student showed me this, I would probably give them a serious telling off and kick them off the... No, I wouldn't do that. But it's very bad practice, except when you have to do it. So you can call that pragmatic if you like. The situation is this. I want to record the place the program reaches at the start of a new command, because if I ever see an FF out of context, that means something bad's happened, I've lost a bunch of data, and the new command's about to start, correct? So what setjump does is it says, record the context of the processor and the position in the program and place it in a buffer. So if you ever want to return to this point in the program again, you can just do it. Now, this is the kind of thing you end up using labels for. I could have implemented all kinds of weird flags and clever loop constructions to avoid this gnarly piece of code, but then I'd have run out of memory. So I put this in. And if you've not seen it before, if you're writing embedded, it's terribly useful because it's basically a way of snapshotting the context of the processor. It's how you do a soft reset, basically. You say, when you say soft reset, go back to the place in my jump buffer. And so if it gets a command, I just send it here. And then I get command number one, which is receive an entire panel. Command number two is receive an entire panel, but using 1 byte per pixel encoding. And then command number three is send me some data from your pins. And command number four is tell me how big your LED array is and what version of the software you're running. And then down below here, we've actually got the stuff that reads the data. And the interesting one is this guy here, Getcha. And if Getcha, he gets a raw character from the Bluetooth interface. And if it's FF, that means, hey, we're starting a new command. Something's gone wrong with the protocol. So it goes, bang, straight back to the start a new command bit. Now, I can do that in 3 or 4 lines of code and about 10 bytes of memory, okay? Any other way of doing this would be horribly, horribly complicated. Can you see why I'm doing it? You have to get used to this kind of way of thinking if you're writing code that talks to embedded devices, because it might not happen with the Bluetooth, and again, it might. You might lose data. If you're using bits of wire, see, all bets are off at that point. All kinds of weird things can happen. So this thing just assembles my data. Here's my little bit of bit stuffing. If it's FE, then we go 1, it's FE. And that's how I actually get my values. Otherwise, I couldn't run my lights at full brightness, which would offend me. So this is all running inside the Arduino. If I hit the button here marked deploy, then or upload, hit that. If my Arduino is plugged in, it pushes the program into the device. It's held in effectively E2 prom, so it won't forget when the power's off. And so when you turn the power back on again, it wakes up and runs the code. So you can make these things embedded, and they just get on with it. It actually works very well. So that's how you do it at both ends. And I've gone back too far. I'll be there. So that's how it works. I'm hoping it hasn't confused you too much. The good news is I'm going to push all this code up onto robmiles.com. You can get yourself an Arduino, and if you have a Windows phone, get one of these adapters and then have a play. I'm hoping that you're sitting there thinking, you know, I could probably use that for the cat flap or whatever, or for data logging. Because remember, you can interface things like passive infrared detectors to detect people walking into a room, all kinds of reed switches, magnets, all kinds of fun you can have with these things. You can also interface these things to RFID readers. So you can basically pick those up and get the numbers out and unpick those as well. So yeah, this is proper old school programming, folks. You've got hardly any memory or data space. There's reasonable performance. It's an embedded device, but this thing's clocked at 8 megahertz, so it doesn't hang around. It's not slow. But nothing like threads. Nothing higher, really, than pushing characters around. And no Visual Studio, sad face. But if you get serious about this, some rather nice people have actually made an Arduino plugin. So you can actually write Arduino code in Studio. It does work quite well with one proviso, which is I found when I was using it, the serial port interface to the device for the debugging thing didn't work as well as it might, but it's been upgraded since then. I think it's about $30 or something. And bearing in mind you get all the good stuff, it's well worth the money. The bottom bullet point's important, though, as well. The debugging tools are as good as you make them, because you're making your own, folks. There's no way you're going to get any kind of stepping through or seeing the contents of stuff. So what can you do? Well, anything you like. Remote sensing and control, wireless comms, motor control. There's devices you can get for £1.50, which will do wireless networking for you. And they're great for remote-controlled toys and all kinds of stuff. You can interface with all kinds of fun things. Steppers and servos, you can make things move around. And, of course, you can do pretty lights. These things are called NeoPixels, and I think they're terrific. They're really, really quite fun to use. And so take a look at those. They're quite amazing. You can get round ones. This is the ones in terms of the wedding light project, which I'm presently engaged in. The device that I'm going to use, if I can find them, you can get these. This is a ring of the same arrangement. These are 16 in a row. And the way they work, they have a power and a ground and a single data line which clocks the RGB values into all the LEDs in sequence. And then once they've been told what color they are, they remember that until next time. So you can have these as many as you like. This one, it's 16. If I have any more than that, I run out of power from my rechargeable battery packs. So that works for me. But you can get these. There's also a circular Arduino you can buy. And then you can make yourself a pair of earrings that light up and flash. I didn't do this for me, obviously, because I've not got pierced ears. But if you like wearable jewellery, you can also get conductive thread. You can get versions of Arduinos you can sew things onto, so you can embed lights in stuff. And that's great. And you can buy a pair of goggles and put one of these on each eye. And it's just so cool. So you can do all that. Maybe it's just me, but you can have all kinds of fun with this stuff, and I would strongly advise you to do so, because it's pocket money prices. For the price of a Xbox One game, you can get yourself an Arduino and a whole pile of goodies to talk to, and you should so do that. It's ever so creative. So, yeah, have a go at that. That's kind of nice. Gadgeteer, I'll mention briefly as well. I mentioned this last year also. This is embedded development .NET style. This is brilliant if you want to make a technical preview or prototype of something proper. You can write C#. You can run it in an embedded device. You can use threading, all the .NET libraries. It's all sort of friendly and proper with proper network support. The board is basically an array of sockets that you plug Gadgeteer devices into and connect up. Design is done inside Visual Studio. You design your circuit. You actually tell you which wires to plug together. And if you're building any kind of prototype hardware for embedded, Arduino is great for cat flaps and low-level stuff. But the micro framework is great for proper connected embedded products. And what I'm doing with it at the moment is anyone know what language this is? Can you tell? Any guess? Anybody know? If you get the... Who said Python? Who said Python? Oh, yes. Yeah, but many years of experience with students has told me that the last place they'll look for the answer is the flipping slide deck. Absolutely. But even so, you have won an owl, so well done. There you go. Now everybody's really interested. This is a piece of... I'm a great believer in this. There's no such thing as a best programming language. There's a really good tweet I saw a few weeks ago. Someone said, a person that knows just one language will defend that language to the death. A person that knows more than one language thinks they're all crap. Okay? For different reasons. Python is great if you like writing dangerous code and you don't really care what happens when it runs, as long as it runs. Python is wonderful. The reason I like Python is that it lives inside lots of other product. There's a tool called FreeCAD, which designs CAD elements. This is a chunk of Python which I have written to basically design one of my Gadgeteer devices. When I run it, it does that and produces a box with space for a display at the top and some mounting pillars for the RFID sensor and the camera. And then I feed that into the Gadgeteer framework. And Gadgeteer is wonderful because if you're playing around with this, all the Gadgeteer devices are available as 3D models. So what you can do is you can download off the Gadgeteer site all the device designs, and you can build your box around it, having a physically accurate model to actually get the pillars in the right place. I don't do that because everything I do is programmatic. All these objects here are effectively little Python classes that know exactly how big a Wi-Fi adapter or a Bluetooth adapter or an SD card adapter is, and it orientates them and lays them out. So I get this out. I then just test it for the slots in the side for things like SD card readers. Then I slice it using Cura, which is the program on the Ultimaker, which we've got at work. And having done that, I can then build the box, which is this one here, I think. And this is, I use this in lectures to further break the spirit of my students. I wanted a device you could pass around the lecture room which would actually allow students to sign in. So I went onto my favorite weapon of choice, i.e. eBay, and I bought 100 RFID tags for about 20 quid. And so I handed all these out to the students. And when they came to see us in the first year, we have a drinks reception with free beer, and we gave them all one of these RFID tags on my machine. They swiped the tag and it said, have a beer. Swipe it again. You've had your one, and we went around and reset it kind of stuff. So they were using this to order beer, so they got to quite like it. And then I changed the code, and so now we pass it around lectures, and they scan their tags. And then I scan my magic tag, and it picks a winner, and the winner gets an owl, or whatever I happen to have in the bag at the time. But never a Surface Pro. Oh, no. This is basically an embedded product, which I based on Gadgeteer, which has got case designs that, again, were written by the Python program that I built. So that effectively, I now have a workflow where I can say I need one of those, and here's the box to put them in. And this thing here, in case you're wondering, that's this device with the lid off. And inside, you can just see, there's my Arduino board, and there's my Bluetooth receiver, and there's just the wires going to there, and then there's the case on top. So if you've got access to a 3D printer, you can think in terms of building rather nice boxes to put things in as well. And that's kind of fun. I'll just spend a few minutes rounding off about Windows Phone 8.1. The story gets even better, as I was saying. You can have background tasks which are fired off by Bluetooth events. There are now Bluetooth profiles for things like heart rate monitors and pacers for running and whatnot. So you can put this into your code as well and start using them. The API is common across the desktop and the mobile version of Windows 8.1, which is nice too. So play with it at this level. Have a little go. It's kind of funky, but do remember that it's actually a trajectory here where you can get even more interesting stuff. Bluetooth LE, which is the low emission, the low-powered version, that's becoming available on the phone platform now. If you go online to places like Cool Components in the UK, or RoboSavvy, or ProtoPic, you can get LE development boards now for about £25, I think, along with the button battery to power them off. And so you can start thinking in terms of writing really low-powered devices which can talk to your phone, and you can use those for tracking or whatever you like. All kinds of fun to be had there. There's a bunch of related sessions which I've been asked to mention. There's some later on today. I should be lying face down in a bucket of custard, I think, by the time I finished all this. So I've done my two for the day. Tomorrow, the most important one, of course, is the 115 one, which I will shamelessly plug, where I'm going to take all this and not touch hardware at all and talk about how to get games running. A quick question. How many folk here fondly remember XNA? Okay, you guys should come tomorrow. You'll like it because it's XNA's second wind. The rest of you come along because there might even be a new joke. But I don't want to get your hopes up too much. Just a final to round this thing off. Don't forget to fill in your evals, and you could win one of those round things that you could tweet what it's for. We'd love to know. But apart from that, and if have any questions, I will take those now. Yep.
Can you pair two Bluetooth things to your phone simultaneously?
Yes. You can actually. They both. If I'm lazy and don't put different names in here, then they'll both appear with the same name. But I could connect to them both at the same time, although I'd be confused. But if you have different names, it gets easier. You compare them both and then find them both and connect them, should you wish to do that. Once you get beyond two or three, performance gets a bit compromised, but it can be done. Yes. In fact, I think I've actually done that. I did in the UK they had this event called Hacked, which was a hackathon, and I went along with some coloured lights and a whole bunch of nothing, And what I made was this thing which I called the difficulty fire, which was, well, you know, you folk are probably mostly too young to remember. Remember records, 12-inch vinyl? If you go to the shop and buy a record, you take it home, you unwrap it, you clean it, you place it on the turntable, you lift the arm carefully across and place it on the groove, you adjust the amplifier, and you have to do all this just to hear the record, you see. And I thought, we don't have enough of that in our lives. So I made this device using Gadgeteer where you had to adjust these things and make the lights flash just so, and then move this slider, and then press this button, and finally it would play you some music. And I used Bluetooth to get the actual music playing on that. And so I'm pretty sure it can be done. And I won a prize, which was nice. At the end of it, you did all this, the music started, and it printed a certificate to say you managed to do it. So you have a real sense of achievement. That was kind of fun. Look for thedifficultyfire.com. I think I bought the domain name because nobody else had it. You can do more than one, is the answer to that question. Any other question? Pardon? Oh, another one? Okay, I took one at the start, but I'll take another one now. Yes, because you can get fame on the Rob Miles blog. What I'll do is I'll just set this to the setting that means just get a picture and don't mess around. I found loads of faces. That's really good. Yeah. And again, there. I'll do some magical stitching. I'll just kick the lamp over. I think. Flipping thing! Okay. Yeah, okay. The picture of the lamp. There you go. They go, is that burning? I can smell. Who cares? Okay, right. Okay, so let's keep going. There, and there, and there. Come on, you can do it. And there. Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming. Have a good rest of conference, and I'll see some of you tomorrow, hopefully.